the Antiwhite system and tune in to the Pro-White system at RadioArian.com.
And welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 3rd of April, 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioArian.com. As it's Wednesday, we have a special guest with us. We have Carolyn Yeager from CarolynYeager.net. Carolyn, how are you doing today?
Well, I'm doing real good, Sven, and I hope you are too. You sound like you are.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. It's been nice spring sunshine here, and I also hear that the weather is temperate over there in Texas, or you were just telling me it was a little bit colder than usual. But I have noticed that you've had a couple of really interesting articles over at your website recently, continuing on from what we were talking about the other week, actually, about what it was that turned America around to fighting on the side of Britain after fighting against Britain. And I noticed that the last two articles that you've had on your website really seems to have explained that. Did you want to go into some of that and explain some of that today?
Yes, I do. You know, this is, I've been posting things, articles on this. This is all based on comes from World War One. And from a German, German-American newspaper, all written in English. These are all American citizens who are of German heritage, who started this to give the German point of view because it was being so, you know, the propaganda that was being put out by the Allied side in this World War One. They recall that then too. Was untrue, you know, and they were demonizing Germany the same as they did in World War II. So, this has become a kind of a passion with me. I love what's in this newspaper and went on. It was a weekly newspaper, went on for a long time. It was called The Fatherland and it, but later once the United States did get into the war, on the side of the Allies and against Germany, they, you know, changed the name. He changed the name of the newspaper. It's just a weekly 16-page paper is what it was. Kind of like the American Free Press today, you know. So, you know, it wasn't a lot of opinion and general coverage. But they changed it and because they didn't want to call it the Fatherland anymore. Anyway, I am up to 1916, and it's now February and March.
Hang on a second. Just out of interest, what did they change the name of it to if it was the Fatherland before?
Well, it changed several times. I without going and checking, I can't remember which one it was changed to, but it was changed to something with the, well, they've already added American flags on the cover to make it clear that they're, you know, not the enemy, but, and the only thing they were calling for was neutrality. They thought that was perfectly okay, you know, they didn't call for helping Germany or anything. They just called for real neutrality, which America wasn't and never was in either one of those wars. So it became known as, the editor was George Sylvester Viereck, and so it became Viereck's journal. But I think that was later. I think there was something in between there that was just more like, I don't more neutral. America's newspaper or something, you know, America's News or things like that, just sort of generalized. But they had such a big following. It was very successful. And it had a lot of advertising in it, too, by this point, you know, that all German stuff is all, you know, the poor Germans trying to get their point of view across. And so this was very popular with them, and they had a big and they're always being accused of being an agent of Germany and being supported by the German government and the imperial government of Germany and so on, and you know, all getting all their funds from there. But they said not, and I don't believe so. Because Germany never did that in either war. They didn't support, financially support movements in the United States because they were always trying to keep the United States from getting into the war. in both cases, you know, they didn't want the United States in the war. Which is why they ended up losing. So, because the United States did get in.
Well, so Henry Ford didn't point. Either, did he? Henry Ford didn't want America getting into the war either, did he? I mean, he went and spoke to Woodrow Wilson in that first article of
Henry
yours.
Henry Ford, yes. And there's couple about a week ago what I posted, there was an article about Henry Ford, and really interesting that, of course, you know, he was very popular in the United States, and the people loved him. And this was before he started doing that International Jew articles in his Dearborn newspaper. But he was very civic-minded, and he was already super rich from his car company. And so he wanted to send this peace ship from the United States, you know, American peace ship, to Europe, promoting the neutral countries there, supposedly neutral again, but they were better neutral than they were more faithful to their neutrality than the United States was. But they there was like Holland and Denmark and Norway, all those countries. They were staying neutral, and Ford wanted to send the ship there and try to get all the neutrals to help keep the United States, you know, to end the war. Actually, he wanted a peace agreement. He wanted to try to find a way to end the war because everybody agreed it was just a pointless slaughter. It was just terrible. World War One was we keep hearing today that World War Two was the worst world ever, war ever, worse than one. But one, I don't know that that's true. One was terrible. And I think last week I mentioned, or in this article somewhere I mentioned, somebody said it was like 20,000 men a day were being killed in Europe. This, you know, it was millions. So this was in this war. So he wanted to do that, and he was going to pay for it all. He had, you know, the ship and everything. And he went to see Wilson. And it's really kind of surprising what Wilson responded to him. Wilson was already talking, you know, well, we might have to get into this war. And, you know, it would be good for humanity because we would bring it to an end. That's what we needed to do, bring it to an end. But he admits to Ford, and it's in this story written by this Michigan reporter who was along with Ford in that meeting. He might have been outside, but Ford told him about it, and he said that Wilson said that he thought that Germany was, he had bought into this idea that Germany was this militaristic country and that it had to be defeated, that it was just going to go on and on. All these crazy ideas, you know, wanted to rule the world. They were pushing that then. And and their cruelty, you know, the Belgian atrocities, which weren't true, and all the other bad behavior by the German army that wasn't true, and then the submarines, the warfare that they resorted to, because that's all they could do to fight England at sea and to keep from being totally destroyed. So that was criticized as being, barbarian or something. And Wilson says, in face of all this, he kept saying he wanted to keep, United States,
He wanted them neutral. To be really armed, but, didn't he? He wanted just, them to have loads of arms. He wanted them to have loads of arms, didn't he? Henry Ford said, let's spend the money on peace, and he wanted to spend it on lots of arms.
He said, we have to crush German militarism first. He says, we can't work out a peace because they had to crush German militarism, and they had to crush Germany. And then they could work out a peace with everyone. So this was the attitude, and this comes directly from the British policy of balance of power in Europe, and they need to crush the country that's getting too powerful against them and or in competition with them. So United States was, of course, delivering arms to the billions to Europe. And they wouldn't stop. And Wilson said that he couldn't stop that because that would be interfering. That wouldn't be a neutral stance. It wouldn't be neutral if he interfered by giving taking away that advantage that England had of ruling the seas. And the reason that only England could get this was because they were in control of the oceans and everything had to be delivered by ship. Anyway, I've talked about that longer than I intended to. Always do. So that was very interesting. And then I might as well continue. Ford did send his ship over there, but a lot of things went wrong. It turned out, didn't turn out to be successful. And they made fun of it. It gave the press an opportunity to make fun of it and to ridicule him. And same story we always hear. So then this great writer for the fatherland, Frederick Schrader, he wrote this expose sort of the Cecil Rhodes secret will and what the Rhodes group was doing and how that tied into the movement in America to get into the war and to support England and France. And so that's what this is all about. And a reader wrote in and said that he was very, very surprised that this was known at this time, because this was what was written by Carol Quigley, much later in the 60s and 70s about in his book, Tragedy and Hope. And then he wrote this book, The Anglo-American Establishment, and the subtitle is From Rhodes to Cliveden. Cliveden is the Astor Group, the Nancy Astor Group in England, and which came later after Rhodes. And this was kind of amazing that this was already known way back then. What was intended, and it's a very interesting article, which I encourage people to read. And then my next one, I follow up with
it was a secret will, wasn't it? It was Cecil Rhodes' secret will, where he sent loads of money, basically, to try and get America to become part of the British Empire, and it must still be going today. Because it was invested, so it would make lots of money, and that was to pay for Rhodes scholarships and to also pay for a movement to get America to become part of the British Empire. And then you've got Woodrow Wilson sort of rebuffing Henry Ford and coming in on the side of Britain. So this secret will may have played a part in it. So you're saying that the secret will wasn't really exposed until later on when this other book was written?
No, well, I don't know, because it was exposed here in the Fatherland, and he wrote about it, or Schrader, and then he mentioned this book, The Pan Angles, by this Sinclair Kennedy, who was an American. And you have to notice all these names are all English names. He graduated from Harvard, and he was, forget now what he did, but, he was in, he lived in Massachusetts, and he wrote this book, and, Schrader quoted from it a few times. And then, a month after this was published, this Kennedy wrote an open letter to the Fatherland newspaper, complaining about the article that Schrader wrote. And Schrader then writes back to him, you know, a rebuttal, which I thought was really excellent, and also gives a lot of information about it. So he said he was really writing about Rhodes' secret will, and that Rhodes also wrote other wills that weren't secret. And he said certain amount in those, but the secret will was the important one, and that's what was kept secret. But he knew it then, and he quoted it. It's in this article in full what he said about what their plans were for the United States. And they basically, the most shocking part of it was that not only did they want to keep all English speaking countries in a federation together, but they wanted to include the United States. They wanted the United States to come back to Britain, so to speak, you know, to come back into the United Kingdom, or to they called it the Commonwealth. You know, it had been the Empire. At some point, the British changed the name. They didn't talk about the British Empire anymore. Or maybe they thought that's when they had ended it and turned it into the Commonwealth. I still have a lot to learn about when that happened and how that happened. But they didn't want to be the British Empire anymore. That was unpopular in the world, so it was now the Commonwealth of these equal English-speaking countries. And you know, there's 53 countries in that. Well, Rhodes' secret desire was to get the United States back into this Commonwealth and into being a part of the United Kingdom great group. And this is what they say is treasonous, the Fatherland, and that was going on, and that there are a lot of people, a lot of them, in the United States, American citizens of English ancestry, who were working toward that same goal. Of course, they would all no doubt deny it and say, no, we're not working for that. We just want to help England. But the overall thing that I'm trying to push is that there was this idea that was put out in the media and everywhere, because they control the media just like now. And it's their ideas were the ones that everybody heard, and they didn't hear the other side. And that's what the Fatherland was all about, trying to get across the other side. But, you know, it's a very small voice. And the idea that they had was that we are Anglo, and we want Anglo to be dominant, the dominant English, British strength in the world. You know, that they're the best. They're the best, and they're the most free. They're the most humane. They're the most humanitarian. They're the most successful. That the whole world should be run by them. And there's this general, and I say even today, there's this, it's like a blanket that lies over all our history and all our news and everything that what is Germanic, you know, which is covers more than just the what this little Germany of today is the enemy. We shouldn't want that. We almost wipe it out, you know. And the what is the English is good and is what where all our good ideas come from and so on. And this has distorted the situation and I think brought us to not a very good place. I want to be able to get in this quote I saw from I saw in VDare last night. Yeah, I was just I looked at that before I went to bed, and I have noted, I mentioned VDare, a couple of people from VDare in a previous post, in their being, their anti-German attitude. And I've noticed this, at first, you know, I've been reading VDare for quite a while and liked it, but, and didn't have a problem, but I wasn't paying attention to the fact that if everybody has an English name there, or, this guy who wrote this one, is Kirkpatrick. I always liked him a lot, but I guess Kirkpatrick is Irish.
But
anyway, he's into that, to the Angloism of VDare. And VDare is actually does, recommend or, endorse that, England, the, and English is what this country, United States was founded on and is and should remain. And so they have a big campaign for English as the national language, which I agree with. I didn't have any problem with that. And non-English in America don't have a problem with the English, but it seems the English have a problem with them sometimes if they're not following along with their line. And so in this article is about Jared Taylor and Martin Selner being not allowed to travel places that they're trying to go. And it's he wrote, the lamps are going out all over Europe. We shall not see them lit again in our lifetime. That's a quote from Sir Edward Grey, the British Foreign Secretary, on the eve of his country's entry into World War I. Well, this was just, you know, the grist for my mill. Because here Kirkpatrick quotes Sir Edward Grey about the lamps going out all over Europe on the eve of World War I, when he was one of the agitators, and not more than that, he was one of the instigators of getting that war started. He and others in England. Who worked for many years to build up hostility with the French and the Russians and anybody else in Europe against Germany. They started this campaign against Germany long before, like around, let's say around 1900 or so for a general date. And he was one of the main characters. And this is the hypocrisy, you say, which is blatant. And I don't, you know, I guess I could say the English are known for their hypocrisy, and they've a lot of great qualities, no doubt about it. The Britain and the British have a lot of great qualities, but they also have are very ruthless, and they self-promoting, and they I would say they personify hypocrisy pretty well. And well, for him to quote, for Kirkpatrick at VDare to quote Sir Edward Grey in this way, in defense of against censorship, as though he was a defender of freedom in Europe when he was the instigator of that horrible war that killed so many millions of young men and set the stage for further damage later on. It's just I thought a good way to demonstrate what I've been trying to say, that here in the United States there is a pro-English attitude that is far stronger than most people realize, although I think it's not as strong as it used to be. And it's not that there's anything wrong with the English at all, but it's very anti-German. And, you know, my thing is that it is anti-German. In fact, I have read anti-German things at VDare, and I noticed them more recently. You know, I said, gosh, you know, that's why are they that way? But they just are. And so I can't answer why they are. But when you start noticing those things, or you get sensitive to it, you notice it more. And so it's all over, I'd say, all over the alt-right movement that is almost is composed of people with Anglo names. And their attitude is very pro-Anglo and basically hostile to Germany. They won't like what happened in World War II, but they won't support. They certainly are anti-National Socialist and anti-Hitler all the way. And they won't go after the Holocaust either. And they're pretty Jew-friendly, some more so than others, like Jared Taylor and VDare are pretty Jew-friendly. Martin Selner, well, those groups in Europe are trying to be friendly with Israel because it's nationalist. But they're not necessarily so Jew-friendly. But they, you know, it's, that's what we've got here. And people, I wonder if we should pay more attention to that, that this is not really a white movement. You know, what they call white, and I keep calling it for white people and European people, it's really English people, British people, and Anglo movement. And in my opinion, you can find plenty of evidence that it still is today.
Well, I think there's a lot of projection there from going back to the First War, where that's what they were accusing the Germans of doing, weren't they? And saying people shouldn't be employing them and all the rest of it. And what you've actually got is you've got a funded movement, an Anglophile movement. You're trying to get America to move back in with Britain. And you know, I think it's only natural that people that share the same language are going to get on well together. And, you know, I mean, and to be honest, if it was just white people running the world, it would be great. But the problem is what you've got with your Commonwealth is you've got all these black countries, all these brown countries, you've got Jews involved in it. And basing it just on language, just on people speaking English means you've got something multicultural there anyway. And you've also got elements of chauvinistic nationalism here as well, where you've got people saying, well, we speak English, so we're against the Germans. The Germans are white and the English are white. And we've got bigger things to worry about than chauvinism between which country is the best. I mean, we're facing, you know, being replaced in our own countries. Every white country is having that. And I think this Rhodes movement it obviously became multicultural, and it became part of the New World Order. And the New World Order, English is the language of commerce. So you've got them speaking English, but you've got Jews and you've got Pakistanis and you've got Muslims involved in it as well. It's I should imagine it's probably become very subverted from what they originally thought. You know, it was like it was going to be. You know, white people that speak in English ruling the world will do away with war. We'll all be getting on. We'll have a fantastic future. But now it's all become miscegenated and corrupted. And that's sort of the way that I see it.
Well, I agree. You know, it's true that language is very powerful. And of course, I speak English and I only speak English. And so, you know, I can hardly, you know, you have to speak the language of a country to be a part of it. You can't be a part of something if you don't. So, there's that. But, I think, my main interest is in these two wars. That, you know, it was the English that wanted these wars for their own purposes. And that's, I've written about that a bit, and so have many other people. But this is ignored. And even among many alt writers, they consider a World War II a necessary war. And they even don't know anything about World War I, so they consider that must have been necessary too. Or at least there was good reasons for it. And this is, I think this is a distortion of history that's being kept intact. And this is why our nations, our white people running our nations, totally cooperate with Jews, because they share that war narrative with them, that the Jews want to blame the Germans for it. And create all these myths about what took place and the people who were mistreated and so on. So the whole thing is a big lie. You know, it's a big lie. And to undo the lie, we need everybody's help. We need this whole, if there's a white movement, we need the help of the whole white movement needs to get on board with that. But they're not. They're not. And they even work against it. Like this quote I just said, you know, from that current article at VDare, that Edward Gray says the lamps are going out all over Europe as though it's not their fault, you know.
Well, so we also get people using Churchill. I mean, we get a lot of that in Britain. People will reference Winston Churchill in the name of nationalism. And you think, well, you know, he destroyed Britain. He destroyed half of Europe. I mean, the man was a devil to the white race, and yet he's put forward as a hero because he defeated the Germans. But what you've got at the root of all of this is you've got this chauvinistic nationalism. You've got the European nations fighting amongst one another, trying to, you know, over who was going to be supreme. And I guess the British thought, if we don't take out Germany first, Germany will get too big and they'll take us out. So we need to take them out first. And I think that was the mentality. And I'm not so sure that was unique to the British. I think maybe the British advanced it to the furthest. I mean, especially in the war when you think of the terror bombing and all of that, it was like, well, we want to finish this war. We want to finish it and totally obliterate the enemy. And then it's over and done with, and there's an end to it. And there's that mentality behind it. And we can't have that mentality today because we're all facing the same enemy. I mean, it's ridiculous to have that.
Germany never wanted to obliterate England or anything, any part of them. Germany never wanted to obliterate anyone, and they also never wanted to take over the world. But we can see that Cecil Rhodes and his group, which was widespread, did want to take over the world, and they thought they would run the world in the best way. And you know, part of their spiel to themselves was that there would be no more war. They would be in control. They'd be so in control. You know, the English Commonwealth would be so in control everywhere that they could prevent war. Well, that's because nobody would have any choice to do anything without their approval. They would run everything with tight control, and that is never good, even if you think it's your side that's doing it. They're not always on your side, are they? Look at why the colonies in America fought for their independence from Britain, from the king, because, or the crown as they called it, because they were not being treated fairly. But their protests were being ignored, what happens. But this is why. It's all based on, you know, you it sounds good, but it can't be defended.
Well, you got projection there as well. You've got the Cecil Rhodes group wanting to take over the world, and then you've got this accusation made Germany wants to take over the world. And then what we actually have today, you know, we've got a multipolar world. That's what Putin wants. And thanks to Putin, we do have that. I mean, we don't have a new world order that controls everything. We have got like a Russian bloc, and we've got an American bloc, which thankfully has prevented the takeover of everything. I mean, that is one thing mm-hmm. that we can thank hooting for. Anyway, we've gone a little bit over time here, Carolyn. So thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
Radio Aryan. At Radio Aryan.